Track 12. Swallows and Pinkfeet. September is a special month in wildlife, as Norfolk Wildlife Trust evangelist Nick Aitchison explains.
It's July when I sit to write at my coffee table desk, cross-legged on the floor, on a bolt of cloth bought on a market in Delhi. Sitting on the floor means the view from my window is almost all sky, a sky which half an hour ago was blue enough for me to strip my bed and wash my sheets. Now, though, as clouds sulk low above the common, swifts gather in an ominous stack, pierced by the blade-sharp wings of a hobby. How do I get to September from here? The swifts will have gone, that's for sure. Already by the middle of August, their numbers will thin as they peel away south to spend what we call winter in a great airborne swirl above Africa. Hobbies leave later, mopping up the fledgling bounty of late summer, but in September they go too. As I type, I can hear the cheery bleat of baby swallows through my open window. They tumbled from the nest just yesterday, and while their parents loop long-tailed above the common, these feathered nippers constrain themselves to cautious circuits of the pond before returning to a perch. Here's how we get to September. These swallow chicks, so newly fledged, will take us there. One sits on a cable outside my house right now, 18 grams of Norfolk carbon, protein and minerals that in a few short weeks, by the end of September, will have made a maiden flight to Africa. Its parents will not show it the way, this new-made wisp of life, nor will they feed it as it goes. Our best guess is that this fragile thing, flicking a nervous tail on the wire outside my window, will be guided by the magnetic field of the earth as it migrates south to Africa. How birds' brains do this remains a mystery, though it seems that as they go, these tiny animals learn terrestrial geography and the constellations. 6 weeks ago, this little bird was but a cluster of fast-dividing cells in its mother's oviduct. In another 6 weeks, come September, if it contrives to dodge the many mortal dangers on its route, it could be in sub-Saharan Africa, this 18 grams of Norfolk carbon, minerals and proteins, with a brain the literal size of a pea. September sees millions of tons of carbon and other nutrients exchanged between land masses and continents in the bodies of birds. For even as swallows and hobbies leave us, great flocks of geese and ducks join us from the Arctic North. In a life lived with nature, there are countless hairs on the back of your neck moments, and for a Norfolk naturalist, one of the hairs on the back of your neckiest comes early in September every year in the clarion voices of returning pinkfeet. Britain is winter home to the bulk of the world population of pink-footed geese, all the birds which breed in Iceland and Greenland, numbering more than 500,000, come here every year, many of them to Norfolk. Indeed, since the pink-footed goose was recognised as a species in the 1830s, the marshes at Holcombe and Wells have almost continuously been celebrated as their winter refuge. For more than a century, ornithologists have written of their love of this wild stretch of the North Norfolk coast and of the geese which haunt it. In 1913, W. H. Hudson wrote in Adventures Among Birds, "Wells next the sea is one of the spots I love best to frequent in the autumn, chiefly to see and hear the wild geese that winter there in larger numbers than at any other point on the coast." 2 decades later, in Morning Flight, first and most beautiful of his books, Peter Scott wrote of his abiding love of pinkfeet and of the Holcombe shore. "There was an orange glow in the east, and out of it came skein after skein of geese, delicately traced patterns on the deep blue of the sky above. Since then, I've seen pink-footed geese flight in hundreds of times, probably thousands of times, and in so doing, I have very likely seen 3/4 of the individuals of the species that exist in the world. Yet the thrill of those first mornings has never decreased at all. It was this love of pink feet which spurred Scott and the ornithologist James Fisher to make their first expedition to Iceland in 1951 in search of the species' main breeding grounds. Guided by Icelandic scientist Finnur Gudmundsson, they made an expedition to the Psorja River, where together they wrote 1,000 geese, a title which describes the number they ringed. Thanks to decades of study by the Wildfowl and Wetlands Trust and others, following Scott and Fisher's pioneering expedition, we know that since 1951, the Britain wintering population from Iceland and Greenland of pink-footed geese has risen from 30 to 50,000 birds to more than 500,000 today. Ironically, this may largely be thanks to the very changes in UK agriculture which have led to catastrophic declines in countless species, including corn buntings, corn crakes and turtle doves, plus a tragic list of arable plants, some of which cling to existence here in just a handful of fields. In recent years, though, our Norfolk pinkfoot flock has again sharply declined, with most birds preferring to stay in Lancashire or Scotland. Whether this is a result of climate change or further shifts in agricultural practice is still a matter of debate. Nature, as September's birds loudly remind us, is complex, ever-changing, ever-challenging, and all-encompassing. We are, in the truest sense, all in this together. Each of us, as surely as a swift, a swallow, or a pinkfoot, is the child of a healthy environment, each fundamentally dependent on nature for our existence. As humans, uniquely, we are powerful to act to nature's detriment or for her benefit. Which, I wonder, this September, will it be?